David, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good morning, Ruby.
Now, I guess on a larger perspective, instead of being cautious and grateful about the commencement of the Games, there's a whole lot of controversy associated with it. How do you see this?
Well, it was always going to be controversial, I think, because we've had this tension that's gone on throughout the pandemic, and we've seen it in the formation of sporting bubbles, especially in Queensland, and, for example, you know, large cohorts of AFL players and their families and officials going to resorts in Queensland in order to continue the season there. There's been this tension over whether major sports events should go ahead, and this is the biggest of anything that we've seen in the pandemic, and whether people are being privileged, whether they're putting other people at risk, whether they, you know, there's a sense of entitlement that goes with elite sport that is not applied to the entitlements of everyday citizens.
Right. And do you think resuming international tournaments, be it in cricket or tennis, because I know the cricket test's on at the moment, do you think it's kind of viable during these times? Like, how does this affect the sports industry?
Well, yes. I mean, the sports industry is already affected. It's essentially ground to a halt for a period last year and has come back in various ways with no crowds or reduced crowds. I mean, I'm obviously we're talking in Sydney. There was a lot of debate about during the test, the second test in at the SCG, whether there should be crowds there. It was reduced to 25%, but there were lots of people in Sydney who said no, that it shouldn't go on at all, because of the danger of people, essentially catching COVID-19 from going in and out and being in some proximity at some times to other people who may be infected and so on. But this has been a really big push in the sports industry, and that word is important here, industry, to keep things going. You might recall Peter Verlandes, who essentially runs rugby league in this country, saying, without rugby league, there is no Australia. So there is a claim on behalf of some within the sport industry that you have to keep sport going for the national morale, but also, of course, to keep the sport industry ticking over as an economic entity.
Of course. And what kind of message does it send to, like, junior players when a player like Novak Djokovic lays out the list of demands without, like, being sensitive towards the fact that we are all still living in a global pandemic? I mean, like, the list of demands was essentially just, like, no more rules.
Well, not exactly no more rules, but certainly much laxer rules than the very strict ones which they were supposed to abide by in order to be allowed to come to Australia in the first place. Someone like Djokovic has form, of course, in this area. I mean, he most famously organised a tennis tour in Croatia and countries nearby. In the middle of the pandemic, and a number of people caught COVID-19, he has a record of statements, for example, about not being in favour of vaccination. So he has a particular wider position, as well as being a leader of a kind of breakaway group in amongst male professional tennis players. I have to say, I'm slightly amused when I hear the statement that some players going into quarantine and being stuck in their room essentially for 14 days are being disadvantaged because all players should be equally positioned going into the Australian Open. The reason I'm amused is, of course, as tennis runs normally, not every player is equally advantaged. So, I mean, there's a huge difference on the tennis circuit between lower-ranked players who essentially go around from tournament to tournament at the lowest levels. They have to pay for themselves, and they hope that they will earn some prize money just to cover their expenses. They stay in rough hotels or not very good hotels. They don't have a big entourage with them, etc., etc. Whereas, of course, the top players have a very affluent and comfortable life, insofar as you can be, if you're given the amount of time they spend on the road. But they certainly are well cushioned from some of those pressures. So tennis is already an unequal playing field in that sense. But it is certainly the case that if you are a professional athlete, you have to spend 14 days in a hotel room. Because you've travelled on a plane with people who are infected with COVID-19. I mean, unquestionably, that's not going to be good for your athletic performance. The alternative surely is, then you shouldn't have come at all and the event shouldn't have happened at all.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, like, it'd be one thing if nobody was infected at all and, they were in very strict quarantine. I'd understand the list of demands, but the fact that there were infected people on the flight is what, like, makes it crazy to me that they're like, oh, well, why do we have to stay here for 14 days? Just wild to me. But enough about me. Last but certainly not least, social media has kind of allowed sports to be played and viewed beyond television. So in the current mess that we're in, how do you assess the role of social media, considering how players also use it as a medium to connect with their audience?
Yeah, social media has been very important in the development of contemporary sport in that, I mean, there was a period when athletes, tennis players and anybody else, in any sport, were largely dependent on the middle person, the media. That's why they call it the media. It's in the middle, and it has been the traditional vehicle for communication. So that puts the sports person in the hands of a journalist or a TV company, radio, newspaper, etc. What social media did was it enabled them to communicate directly with fans and the wider public. And this was seen as being to the advantage of the sports person more intimate, more direct form of communication. Trouble is that social media is two-way. So not only can the sports person communicate through it, but other people communicate, obviously, back. And let's put it this way, it's not always messages of love and support and admiration. So sports people get piled on for things they say in social media. They say something in social media, pile on comes back, or they say something on television, and they might be stringently attacked, as has happened with some other tennis players who've complained about their treatment in the Australian Open and the quarantining. So social media is, as I say, a two-way phenomenon, and it can be to the great advantage of sports people in able to get their message out there, but then also other people in very large numbers can get their message to them and they may not like what they hear and see.
Of course. Well, David, thank you so, so much for joining us on the show today. It's been really great talking about this.
Thanks a lot, Ruby. Cheers.